Ali lights a cigarette in the quiet of a stone room in the convent overlooking the lake. She brings it to flame in the old way, with a spark from her fingertips. The paper crackles and blackens into glowing light. She breathes it in to the edges of her lungs. She is full of her old self. She has not smoked for years. Her head swims. It is not hard to find Mrs. Montgomery Taylor. 1, 2, 3 words typed into a search box, and there she is. She runs a children's home now, under the auspices and with the blessing of the new church. She was an early member there in Jacksonville. In a photograph on the website of their children's home, her husband stands behind her. He looks a great deal like Mr. Montgomery Taylor. A shade taller, perhaps. A little bushier in the moustache, a little rounder in the cheek. Different colouring. A different mouth, but the same broad category of man. A weak man. The kind of man who, before any of this, would still have done what he was told. Or perhaps she's remembering Mr. Montgomery Taylor. They look sufficiently similar that Ali finds herself rubbing her jaw in the place where Mr. Montgomery Taylor hit her, as if the blow had landed only moments ago. Lyle Williams and his wife, Eve Williams. And together they care for children. It is Ali's own church that has made this thing possible. Mrs. Montgomery Taylor did always know how to work a system to best advantage. The website for the children's home she operates talks about the love and discipline and tender respect they teach. She could have looked any time. She cannot think why she has not turned on this old light before. The voice is saying things. It's saying, don't do it. It's saying, turn away. It's saying, step away from the tree, Eve, with your hands up. Ali doesn't listen. Ali picks up the handset of the telephone on the desk here in the convent room overlooking the lake. She dials a number. Far away in a hallway with a side table topped by a crocheted runner, a telephone rings. Hello, says Mrs. Montgomery Taylor. Hello, says Ali. Oh, Allison, says Mrs. Montgomery Taylor. I hoped you'd call. Like the first drops of rain, like the earth saying, I'm ready for it. Come and get me. Ali says, what have you done? Mrs. Montgomery Taylor says, just what the Spirit has commanded me to do. Because she knows what Ali means. Somewhere inside her heart, for all the twisting and turning, she does know, as she's always known. Ali can see in that moment that everything will disappear is a fantasy, has always been a delightful dream. Not the past, not the lines of pain inscribed on the human body, not a thing will ever disappear. While Ali has been making her life, Mrs. Montgomery Taylor has also continued, growing monstrous as the clock turned. Mrs. Montgomery Taylor keeps up a bright line of chatter. She's so honored to receive a telephone call from Mother Eve, although she always knew she would. She understood what was meant by the name Ali had taken on, that she was Ali's real mother, her spiritual mother, and hasn't Mother Eve always said that the mother is greater than the child? She understood what was meant by that, too, that the mother is the one who knows best. She is so happy, so delighted, that Ali understood that everything she and Clyde did, they did for her own good. Ali feels sick. You were just a young girl, so wild, says Mrs. Montgomery Taylor. You drove us to distraction. I saw that the devil was in you. Ali remembers it now, as she has not brought it out into the light these many years. She pulls it from the back of her mind. She blows the dust from this heap of rags and bones. She stirs them with a fingertip. she arrived at the home of the Montgomery Taylors, a jangled child, beady and bird-like and wild, her eyes seeing everything, her hands in everything. It was Mrs. Montgomery Taylor who brought her, and Mrs. Montgomery Taylor who wanted her, and Mrs. Montgomery Taylor who spanked her when her hand was in the raisin jar. It was Mrs. Montgomery Taylor who grabbed her arm and threw her to her knees and commanded her to pray that the Lord would forgive her sin, over and over on her knees.
"We had to drive that devil out of you. You see that now, don't you?"
says Mrs. Montgomery Taylor, now Mrs. Williams. And Allie does see it. It is as clear to her now as if she were watching it through the glass panes of their own sitting room. Mrs. Montgomery Taylor tried to pray the devil out of her, and then to beat the devil out of her. And then she had a new idea.
"Everything we did," she says, "we did for love of you. You needed to be taught discipline."
She remembers the nights Mrs. Montgomery Taylor would put the polka on the radio real loud, and then Mr. Montgomery Taylor would ascend the stairs to give her the teachings. She remembers all at once and with great clarity which order those steps occurred in. First, the polka music, then the ascent of the stairs. Beneath every story, there is another story. There is a hand within the hand. Hasn't Allie learned that well enough? There is a blow behind the blow. Mrs. Montgomery Taylor's voice is sly and confidential.
"I was the first member of your new church in Jacksonville, Mother. When I saw you on the television, I knew that God had sent you to me as a sign. I knew that she was working through me when we took you in, and that she knew all that I had done for her glory. I was the one who made the police documents disappear. I've been caring for you all these years, darling."
Allie thinks of all that was done in the house of Mrs. Montgomery Taylor. She cannot pull apart the strands of it, has never separated the experiences into individual moments to examine each one closely and particularly. Remembering it is like a sudden flash of light upon carnage, body parts and machinery and chaos, and a sound that builds from a reedy cry to a full-throated scream and then cuts off to a low, humming, almost silence.
"You understand," she says, "that God was working in us. All that we did, Clyde and I, we did so that you would be here."
It was her touch she felt every time Mr. Montgomery Taylor laid himself upon her. "She cuppeth the power in her hand. She commandeth it to strike." Allie says,
"You told him to hurt me."
And Mrs. Montgomery Taylor, now Mrs. Williams, says,
"We didn't know what else to do with you, Angel. You just wouldn't listen to anything we said."
"And do you do the same now with other children, with the children in your care?" But Mrs. Montgomery Taylor, now Williams, has always been shrewd, even in her madness.
"All children need different kinds of love," she says. "We do what's needed to care for them."
Children are born so small. It does not matter if they are boys or girls. They are all born so weak and so powerless. Allie comes to pieces quite gently. All the violence in her has been spent out 100 times. When this thing happens, she is calm, floating above the storm, watching the raging sea below. She puts the fragments together, sorting and resorting them. How much would it take to put it right? Investigations and press conferences and admissions. If it is Mrs. Montgomery Taylor, it is others too. More than she can count, probably.
Her own reputation will suffer. Everything will come out, her past and her story and the lies and half-truths.
She could move Mrs. Montgomery Taylor quietly on elsewhere. She might even find a way to have her killed. But to denounce her would be to denounce everything. If she roots this out, she roots out herself. Her own roots are rotten already. And with this, she is undone. Her mind disconnects from itself. For a while, she's not here. The voice tries to speak, but the howling of the wind inside her skull is too loud, and the other voices now too numerous. In her mind for a time, it is the war of all against all. It cannot sustain. After a while, she says to the voice, "Is this what it's like to be you?" And the voice says, "Fuck you. I told you not to do it. You should never have been friends with that monk. I told you and you wouldn't listen. She was just a soldier. What did you need a friend for? You had me. You always had me." Allie says, "I never had anything." The voice says, "Well, what now then, if you're so clever?" Allie says, "I keep meaning to ask, who are you? I've wondered for a while. Are you the serpent?" The voice says, "Oh, you think because I swear and tell you to do stuff, I must be the devil? It's crossed my mind. And here we are. How am I supposed to tell which side is good and which is bad?" The voice takes a deep breath. Allie's never heard it do that before.
"Look," says the voice, "we've reached a tricky moment here. I'll give you that. There were things you were never supposed to look at, and now you've gone and looked at them. The whole point of me was to keep things simple for you. You see? That's what you wanted. Simple. Feel safe. Certainty. Feel safe. I don't know if you're aware," says the voice, "but you're lying on the floor of your office right now, with the phone cradled under your right ear, listening to the sound of beep, beep, beep. And you won't stop shaking. At some point, someone's gonna come in and find you like this. You're a powerful woman. If you're not back soon, bad things are gonna happen. So I'm giving you the crib sheet right now. Maybe you'll understand it. Maybe you won't. Your whole question is the mistake. Who's the serpent? And who's the Holy Mother? Who's bad and who's good? Who persuaded the other to eat the apple? Who has the power and who's powerless? All of these questions are the wrong question. It's more complicated than that, sugar. However complicated you think it is, everything is always more complicated than that. There are no shortcuts. Not to understanding and not to knowledge. You can't put anyone into a box. Listen, even a stone isn't the same as any other stone. So I don't know where y'all think you get off labeling humans with simple words and thinking you know everything you need. But most people can't live that way. Even some of the time, they say only exceptional people can cross the borders. Truth is, anyone can cross. Everyone has it in them. But only exceptional people can bear to look it in the eye. Look, I'm not even real. I'm not real like you think real means. I'm here to tell you what you want to hear. But the things you people want I'm telling you. Long time ago, says the voice, another prophet came to tell me that some people I'd made friends with wanted a king. I told them what a king would do. He'd take their sons for soldiers and their daughters for cooks. I mean, if the daughters were lucky, right? He'd tax their grain and their wine and their cows. These weren't people with iPads, you feel me? Grain and wine and cows were what they had. I said, look, a king will basically make you into slaves, and don't come crying to me when that happens. That's what kings do. What can I tell you? Welcome to the human race. You people like to pretend things are simple, even at your own cost. They still wanted a king. Ali says, are you trying to tell me there's literally no right choice here? The voice says, there's never been a right choice, honey bun. The whole idea that there are two things and you have to choose is a problem. Ali says, then what shall I do? The voice says, listen, I'll level with you. My optimism about the human race is not what it once was. I'm sorry it can't be simple for you anymore. Ali says, it's getting dark. The voice says, sure is. Ali says, welp, I see what you're saying. Been nice working with you. The voice says, likewise. See you on the other side. Mother Eve opens her eyes. The voices in her head are gone. She knows what to do.